ladies and gentlemen. The story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Waco, Texas. On Friday, January 28th, at about 7:40 p.m., at the Quick Trip located on 2350 South New Road, initial reports indicated that a man was actively stabbing a female and was chasing her into the gas station, police said in a news release. A Good Samaritan who witnessed the incident stepped in and fired a weapon at the aggressor in defense of the woman, according to Waco police. The woman who was stabbed and the man who was shot by the Good Samaritan were both transported to a nearby hospital for treatment of severe injuries. The man who fired the weapon remained at the scene and cooperated with investigators and was released without being charged with a crime, police said. This has been the DGU Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America armed and free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America armed and free, both in uniform, as my guest has been, and not in uniform, as myself, unless you count ROTC or Boy Scouts, and those don't count. And he is a Lieutenant Colonel retired. Darren Gobb is an Army veteran, a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, and squadron leader, and co-founder and executive director of RestoreLiberty.org. Colonel Gobb spent 28 years in military service, with 7 years in command and 3 years training military forces for combat, including a hybrid warfare environment such as Ukraine. He helped build contingency plans for Ukraine designed to address the unique characteristics of a conflict in Eastern Europe based on lessons from Russian operations on the Crimean Peninsula. He completed 4 deployments to Afghanistan, as well as South Korea, Eastern Europe, and North Africa. And we're going to talk a little bit about the invasion of Ukraine, but we're going to talk about some other things, too. I just invested the last hour reading your redeclaration of independence, all 17 points of it, to the audience with commentary. And Colonel Gobb?
Yep, like Gobstopper.
Got it. Got it. Colonel Gobb, and he's asked me to call him Darren, but on this show we do the honorific at least once. So, Colonel Gobb, that was amazing. Who did you and the general put that together? Was it just him? Was it you?
Actually, it was the document put together by myself and my deputy director, John Sheets, who is currently serving in the Border Patrol here in northern Montana.
And Mr. Sheets needs to learn how to smile for a picture.
Well, you know, at the time we were asking for a picture, I don't think he had a smiley one available. So the day may come when that gets changed, that's for sure.
At least you know I looked at the website.
Yeah, I do, clearly, yes.
Nothing like knocking the guest off his center in the first minute of the interview. Yeah, Colonel Gobb.
You know, you're not going to bother me. I, you know, at 28 years in the military, I got very good about tap dancing in front of anybody.
Yeah. Well, we won't ask you to do it in backwards and in high heels. Darren, I want to get to the meat of the topic. I want to talk both. I'm kind of driven in two directions, one to talk about Ukraine and the other to talk about your Freedom Foundation. What is the nexus between the two?
Well, I guess the nexus between the two is the fact that Blaine Holt and I are co-founders of this organization, along with John Sheets, really coming alongside to do that deputy work. But in the end, because of my experience in Eastern Europe and being a strategic planner and working at that level, building plans for and training people to fight in that kind of environment, take that and add in Blaine Holt's experience with being the chief of logistics for the America's NATO delegation in Europe, it just kind of ended up being a natural match for the people we've been talking to in the media to add in us coming in and talking about the conflict that's going on there and lending our expertise and knowledge of history and the fact that we have a lot of folks that are still in those countries that we know. We can bypass a lot of the news spin cycle, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a little bit of ground truth in, as well as some historical perspective to it all.
Do you think, and this is a very hypothetical, that if President Trump were president now, that he would have lend leased a number of A-10s and quietly allowed and the equivalent of the AVG, the American Volunteer Group, to take them to the theater of combat and decimate every Soviet tank inside Ukraine?
You know, that's a good question. I wish I could stand here and say, I know that this would happen. No, I don't know.
Does General Chenault have a great-grandson or great-granddaughter? Does Pappy Boyington have any grandkids?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest.
I don't either. But holy moly, if there was a black sheep squadron, there would be no Russian attack. I know. Yeah, it's just a fantasy.
To say the least.
Say that again.
That would get, in today's environment, that would be viewed as an escalation for sure. Regardless of who's in the conflict, we're going to be the ones that are left being told that
Not if you lend-leased them to Ukraine or even seconded them to the United Nations. Of course, if the United Nations got a hold of the command structure, their GAO-8 would be shooting blanks. But, I mean, if you put them under the UN or some other auspices where they're not fighting as Americans getting involved in it, and, hell, we were going to surplus the A-10 pretty soon anyway.
Well, believe me, I was still in Army Aviation when they were talking about that. And
yeah.
If the Air Force gave up that plane, the Army was standing right there saying, okay, I think we'll take it, and that'd have been in line to transition what aircraft I flew.
Really?
The Army showed such an interest in the airframe itself that I guess you could say that debate went away.
Right, because the Air Force never wants to lose an airframe to a competitive branch of service, that for sure. Now you got me down a rabbit hole. Are you fixed wing qualified?
Not qualified, but I have done it.
Ah, yeah, and you would do it. Mm-hmm. you would fly her at 430, not 431 knots. That's her maximum speed. So, anyway, what is the latest according to what you know of what's going on in Ukraine? And you may have inside sources that exceed what we do.
Well, I guess one of the keys there is we try to look at the general strategy of what we think is on the mind of Putin, because you know what's on the mind of NATO, and subsequently America and their allies is interesting, but we have to and try to focus on what is Putin thinking, what's he trying to do, and it's an imperfect science to be sure, but ultimately it seems to be that the majority of the focus is the desire to decapitate the government of Ukraine and replace it with people that are more willing to align with the Russians, the Russian proper versus the West in general, whether that be NATO or America specifically. And that's what's interesting is this escalation of putting the nuclear forces on a higher state of alert, along with other forces within Russia.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns is, well, why is he doing this now? What is he feeling is the increased threat? Is it purely economic?
No,
the Ukrainians are doing better than the Russians.
No, it's because the Ukrainians have figured out how to attack the Russian supply columns, and the bear is getting its tail empennage kicked, and he's doing that to rattle the saber.
He absolutely is, and that's at least my impression of it as well. But ultimately, what he can't have is a strategic military or embarrassing failure at this point. And we don't necessarily – there's a risk to him having that too, because if you step back and look at this from a truly dispassionate, unemotional perspective, given Russia's history, Putin's background, and their ability to perpetrate significant humanitarian issues, he's actually been somewhat reserved.
Yes.
In what he could do to Ukraine. And I've been actually pretty surprised at that in some ways. And I recognize there's a self-preservation side of that, which is if he does that, he's going to really unite, globally a bunch of countries against him even more than they already are.
When you get Britain to send Javelin missiles, that's getting the Queen fairly pissed off.
Well, that and Germany.
Yeah.
Passing its normal policy about lethal aid, saying, you know what, man, we better do this. Now, there's a risk here to using these huge brushes about turning all things Russia into the bad guy and all things Ukraine into the good guy and picking a side and just strictly going down that lane. Ukraine certainly has a history with the U.S. of wagering who's going to be its ally.
Mm-hmm. And paying handsomely for the privilege. That's why they buried Hunter Biden's laptop.
Right, and it's only buried over there. It's not buried here. There's a report out today that's been put out about his laptop as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to take a look and see what's on there. But America is not innocent, and I'm doing what I would call a government structure on government structure comparison. Versus the people of each nation comparison. And that is that the relationship between Ukraine, the United States, and others, we are not sitting here in an innocent position in all of this. We definitely pushed some of this ourselves, and if not directly, then indirectly, by creating an enemy in Ukraine for Russia to come after, because let's just put it out there that Ukraine's a buffer state between some major power politics. They threw their lot in largely with the U.S. Putin wasn't going to have that, for one. And two, there were many promises that we failed on. Hey, give up your nukes. We're going to be your security guarantee.
Yeah, that was a mistake on Ukraine's part. They should have never done that.
Right, and it's easy, of course, to look back in history and say, "Well, you made a mistake here." But if you've got an ace in the hole,
yeah,
when it comes to securing your own persons and property, I guess you could say, from a national level, that's not something I would be too quick to give up.
Yeah, of course, you couldn't very well, if you're Ukraine, you cannot very well threaten to nuke Moscow and get away with it. Because that would give Putin the casus belli to actually go nuclear, at least tactically, and say, hey, look, he threatened us. We can't have that. So you couldn't threaten it, but he might do it, but he could never threaten it. The first indication of his use of nuclear weapons would be the mushroom cloud. Otherwise, it wouldn't be survivable by the defender.
Well, and that's why we just come back to the word nuclear has always been used with deterrence.
Right. Yeah. The madman's, the mutually assured destruction strategy. Hmm.
Right. If you're threatening a nation and its sheer existence is now suddenly on the line, you push them beyond the point of caring what they do.
Yeah. And I don't think the Russian people have an appetite either for this war. I think this is a war of megalomania, really, on the part of the one guy running the show. Hey, we're up on our first break. Stand by with us. We're with Lieutenant Colonel Gobb, retired of the United States Army, and we'll be right back on America Armed and Free in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells,
is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free. That we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, and he's an Army Black Hawk pilot, and also in command ranks during several operations. And you have some experience. I take it you recognize that music.
Yeah, I started out and I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, the music should fit. That's the Ukrainian national anthem. And I figure the music should fit the interview, right? So
absolutely.
Going back to this, you know what I should have done? I should have had a Blackhawk spooling up in the background. That's what really would have really got him going. He wouldn't have been able to stop. He'd have overflowed despite his control of emotions from command, being a pilot. Anyway, I digress. Man, I lost my own train of thought. Your experience in Ukraine, what is your read of the Ukrainian spirit vis-a-vis that of the Russian bear?
Sure. No, it's and I will tell you that my experience is all around Ukraine mostly. It's Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Poland, and so it's less inside the country of Ukraine. But a lot of those Eastern European nations are very very similar in mindset and in histories. And but it's pretty clear that the people that we're talking to, that there is a, I guess you could say, the elan, or that spirit of fighting an overarching foe, gives them a bit of a David and Goliath feeling. And they have, for the most part, they have really no desire to leave. This is their country. They love their country. They love their people. They're going to defend it, for the most part, with everything they've got. It doesn't matter whether you're a child or 80-year-old or male or female or anything. A lot of those folks are staying by and saying, you know what, we're going to stay here and fight the Russian bear. And I give it to President Zelensky that he's leading that example for sure, along with a bunch of his government.
You know, I got such a kick out of when the United States offered him a ticket out. He said, I don't need a ticket out. I need more ammunition. I mean,
yeah, I don't need a ride.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be similar in response to General. Memory escapes me for a moment at the Battle of the Bulge. Nuts.
Yes, yes.
General McAuliffe.
Battle of Bastogne, and he told to surrender.
Yeah, General McAuliffe, I believe, right? Nuts.
Yeah,
nuts. you know, I don't need a ride. I need more ammunition. You know, you could hear.
That's the first thing I thought of, too, when they had the Snake Island event with the, you know, with the
I wanted to cover that.
13 people.
Yeah, when the Ukrainians told the Russians blank you, and they died doing it, and you know there's going to be statues to those guys. You know what the second most statued person who the second most statued person is in Poland after Lech Walesa?
Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
I stood next to his statue out by the U.S. Embassy in Poland.
That's not the only one in the country.
No, it is not. They very much love us there.
Yeah.
We've loved working with them. I've worked with the Polish and I've worked with them and the Ukrainians and the Romanians and others in Afghanistan. And
The Romanians.
They should not be underestimated.
No. The Romanians did one of the most heroic things in World War II in the repatriation of 432 American downed aviators. And it's called Operation Halyard, where they actually constructed airfields so that C-47s could come in and evacuate the Americans. And the Americans, in return, realized that the fighters in Romania and in Yugoslavia, the fighters didn't have supplies. They took off their flight jackets and boots and threw them out of the airplanes and left them behind for the people that had rescued them. It was an amazing episode in American history in 1944.
Yeah. Yeah, war and conflict takes on a funny taste when you start leaving the era of the arena of geopolitics and national political structures and what they're doing, and you get down into the soldiers and mm-hmm. what they do on the front lines and in the cockpits and wherever else the ships, wherever else they may be. It becomes about the people around you, and then you get your stories of people taking a Christmas break mm-hmm. in the Ardennes Forest and things
right.
like that.
Playing singing. Soccer.
Yeah. Right. You're like, and that goes back to your point right before the break about the willingness of populations to be involved in conflicts like this.
Yeah.
When it's such a geopolitical power structure over a lot of things that are not even necessarily seen or acknowledged.
Right.
And, like our role in causing part of this as Americans.
What do you think that role is?
Well, I think ultimately what it comes down to is Ukraine had the ability to choose A or B when it came to their strategic partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw in with what they thought was going to be a victorious Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016, for one, both monetarily and with security guarantees and all the different parts and pieces of what we put in place in Ukraine with working with them over the Obama administration and beyond. And when that didn't happen and the actual winning administration refused to play certain parts of that game, and, well, basically if you're going to pick a hammer or an anvil, and if you're going to pick wrong one way or the other, they picked us because of a lot of different reasons
mm-hmm.
and didn't realize that in the end that they were going to have some issues with the people that they bordered on. And that's, of course, the Russian nation. You're a buffer state in the end. You're a large buffer state. And they chose us instead of Russia for all these security guarantees.
And we didn't do it.
By the way, we also pushed a color revolution in 2005, and then in 2014 with the Maidan Revolution and the border incursions off over in the Donbas region,
mm-hmm.
which that was a small chunk taken out of Ukraine in order to keep them from being able to be part of NATO because they have contested boundaries. Russia looks at NATO as an offensive force, not a defensive force. We got to put ourselves in the heads of Putin and his people. If the reverse were true here in America, and a foreign entity was the predominant driving characteristic of building a coalition that was surrounding us on all our borders, how would we respond?
Well, there's a difference. We're not aggressive. The Russians are. We don't.
I don't disagree with that.
We don't seek new territory. We don't seek to install our system of government, Putin does. Putin actually doesn't so much seek to install his form of government as his own kleptocracy. And the kleptocracy is, for those who don't have a dictionary handy, is government by theft. And Putin is all about Putin. That's his only constituent. He doesn't give a flying blank about his people. He cares about his bank account. That's all he ever has cared about. And the bank accounts of the people around him so that he can control them via money. And he doesn't, because if he can't, he kills them. And that's the government.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, and that's the government he wants to install throughout the world because he wants the world to be his oyster. The United States does not want that. There may be people, there may be some companies that would like to have monopolies in like they do in China, like Google. There are companies that will bend their will to a national government, but there isn't a government that will do it. And with Putin, there is. So that's what he wants.
Well, that's what he wants. And if people think that that there isn't some level of coordination between Russia and China on all this, even before all these events kicked off, I would say that they probably need to revisit that opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Excuse me. We got a caller. Mike, you want to ask a quick question before the break? And then we'll, if we need to, we'll continue after. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for just a fascinating subject. To the gentleman on the phone,
Colonel
thank you
Dobb.
For your service, sir.
And, Colonel Dobb, excuse me.
Okay. Well, thank you for your service. The question in my mind is, and I'll ask it freely, how corrupt is the Ukrainian government versus the Russian government, and why do you think Putin actually is doing what he's doing, besides the financial gain?
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, no, I would say overall the corruption in the Ukraine doesn't look a whole lot different than Russia in general. I think one of the biggest differences is Zelensky himself. And some of those closest to him, that he is not the Putin. I mean, look at where they each are. Zelensky's in the middle of it, not leading his nation, and he's leading his people. And Putin is managing this conflict from afar. That's a difference in leadership style, and kind of shows you a mentality challenge.
It's almost the Israeli model.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, what it seems to me is that you have Russians that. Do not want to be there. They're being forced to take arms against their brethren, and it's such a deep conflict. There's so many different issues based on this whole marching in. There's no way that the Ukrainians want to kill the Russians any more than the Russians want to kill the Ukrainians. Although I understand through the grapevine that. They're not very friendly towards each other. Do you happen to know if that is correct?
In some regards, they are not friendly towards each other. But when you separate the governments from the people, by and large, you're looking at people who, frankly, would rather be left alone to pursue their own lives in their own countries and not worry about something like this geopolitical conflict going on over the benefits of which flow upwards, not down.
Right. Well, with the Ukrainians being the breadbasket of the world over there, or of that region, it just doesn't make any sense as to why they would have given up their nukes, even for this FAW peace that they went along with when they gave them up. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a tough one looking backwards on, for sure, why you would give up your ace in the hole. The world's changed a lot since then, for sure.
Well, at the time, it appeared to be in their interest to do it because they were given so many guarantees. But you can't trust that. You can't trust any government. I mean,
But it's the same recipe in Afghanistan. I mean, all of these different governments that we have propped up and given our assurances to, we end up screwing them around in the end when it really counts. And that's what's got me frustrated.
Yeah, but Afghanistan didn't have an ace in the hole, and Ukraine did. What's Ukraine got to offer? I mean,
I'll tell you what they have to offer. They have tons of steel. They have ore. They have tons of energy that they can sell. That is one of the reasons why Putin wants to get that back together.
Yeah.
It is a huge financial gain for him.
Yep.
Not.
And that's the main thing. I don't think there's, I mean, he's got a loyalty to the old Soviet Union. He said it was the greatest disaster of the 20th century when it fell apart.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's kind of leaving out the Holocaust and a few other things that went wrong. But, you know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? But,
well, they lost 200 million. What was it, 200?
No, they lost 20 million people.
20 million, thank you.
Right, but that was... They considered that, you know, a sacrifice. And, frankly, communism has killed a lot more people than that. Gentlemen, if you want to hold on, you both can. But I am potting you both down with one hand. I am potting you both down.
Make my day.
Oops. I did. That was not intentional. I accidentally hit the button on that. Bert Lee always called me the man of a thousand fingers. He probably wasn't wrong. All right. Stand by. We're up on our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back with Lieutenant Colonel Gobb in just a little bit. And Darren will rejoin us on the other side of the break if I put the pot up so you can actually hear the music.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
A little bit more of the Ukrainian national anthem, and just if you just joined us to reset, we have retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb on with us, United States Army. He's a Black Hawk pilot, also a combat veteran, also served in command ranks, and was a strategic planner. And welcome back, Darren. And
yeah, thanks.
My pleasure, and glad that you're able to be on. Acknowledge that General Blaine Holt is your co-conspirator in establishing the restore-liberty.org, which is a 501c4, and of course the c4 being one that can act a little bit more politically than a c3. Is that correct? You're c4.
Yeah. That's correct. But we're actually a c4 and a c3 and a super PAC. So
you have all.
Do a lot of different things. It depends on which hat you want me to throw on.
That's interesting. You did all of them at once. We did it separately when we formed the Arizona Citizens Defense League here. We're the primary self-defense civil rights lobby in Arizona. We're the primary boots on the ground. We've had 71 bills signed by three governors over 17 years. And we started with the C4 and eventually developed the C3 Foundation for bringing FASTER, which is a teaching methodology to bring safety to the schools in the terms of armed school staff, but especially first aid training and blowout kits, chest seal patches and tourniquets, and the training in emergency gunshot wound trauma to the schools. And so far, no school with a FASTER program in it has been attacked by anybody.
No, that's awesome. That's good to hear. Part of what I do up here in Montana as well is teach people a little bit about how if you start out with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, food, water, shelter, and then move into medical supplies and things unique to your family, that if you and you backtrace those to a source somewhere, what you've created is a supply chain for the sustainment of life.
Mm-hmm. Somehow.
And they're like,
Somehow, hearing a Black Hawk pilot talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's almost a collision of the rotor blade with something, you know?
Well, I was an officer, so not a warrant officer. I was allowed to be a generalist in some ways and do a lot of other things.
It's really refreshing to hear somebody in the military who worked at the ground level or just above the ground level, as the case may be, and is a strategic thinker.
And I don't know how that happened. I think it was accident. I mean, I honestly started out enlisted in the infantry, and when people asked me how I became the officer I became, I said it's because of the sergeants that I was under before. So I think that helped. And then in some ways, it just turned into a hobby. And then I went to a strategic planner's course in the military that was extremely competitive to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And you just started thinking, you kind of elevated yourself to a certain level of thinking about a problem while also hoping that you never forget the fact that there's somebody on the ground that has to execute what you're planning and somebody else is approving. And if it's done poorly,
people die.
And a planner and a staff at a higher headquarters, you're not going to pay the price. But the junior soldiers there, the airmen and marines, those kind of guys, those are the ones who are going to pay the price for things that we do poorly. So I knew I had to elevate the game of my own in how I thought.
It reminds me of the change of command ceremony in 2010 at USS Tucson. And Commander Spear was thanking his crew. And he says, "You see that man standing over there with the telescope? That's the chief of the boat. And my success has been largely, if not completely, designed around the idea of him telling me where to go." And he
Mom
did.
Ones will do that.
He did. He did get a rise out of the audio. The ones laughing loudest was the row behind me. They were the admirals. So.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Some of them were laughing because yes, they agreed. Some of them are going, "How dare you challenge my personal abilities to advance myself?" You know, whatever that may look like.
But, I got to tell you, I think it was more of the former in the row behind me, because as Captain Spear went off to, he was actually commander, but they call him captain when he's the skipper of the ship. When Captain Spear was going off to Tucson, and they piped him off over the side, he stopped for a moment and he petted the sail of the submarine. And the loudest sobs I heard were from the back row behind me, the admirals knowing how he felt. So,
yeah, no matter how high you promote, you really want to be the guy that's on the edge. Being in the place where you need to be. I mean, let's just say I were to get drafted back in and have to go do something with all this stuff going on right now. I mean, the personal torture would be to be put me on an inner ring of the Pentagon somewhere. I would absolutely hate that.
Yeah. You know, there was recently some pictures going around of a general who was visiting the theater of combat in Afghanistan, and people were commenting that he was still carrying a 1911 that he'd been issued years before, and that was his personal sidearm. It wasn't his gun that he'd brought to the war. It was the Army's gun had given him, and he'd always kept it around. And I thought that's emblematic of the remark you just made about wanting to be back in the action. So,
the good ones will find their way there.
Yeah. What is it you think will happen in the end of this, if you had a crystal ball?
Oh, boy. Yeah, if I had that power, I'd be betting on everything in sports and horse racing. But
you bet your life for 28 years.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, and others in many ways. But I can see some sort of end to this where people are sitting across the table from each other trying to figure out how maybe Ukraine can really align itself with its neighbor better than they are currently aligned with the West, and what that looks like. I don't know for sure what the kind of deals would work out, but I don't think Russia has any desire to become an occupying power of a 44 million person nation that they've just really woken up. I think they'd be content to have a limited footprint, have a government that is back under, if not the direct compliance as a vassal state, but at least sympathetic again, more towards Russia than they currently are now. And what comes out as far as what's could be exposed in all of that as things settle out, I don't know. But we're talking about a Russia that brought 75% of the majority of its military forces to bear in order to do this one operation. That's no small gamble on Putin's part. He's going to walk away from this with something, or he's going to walk away with losing it all.
Well, hopefully the latter, not the former. But the thing is that Putin wants a bank account and Ukraine wants a country. So they're negotiating. They're not negotiating over the same thing. You talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, the people of the country want a country, and Putin wants, he wants lucre. That's all he cares about. He's a sociopath.
Their economy is stagnant at best. So
say again?
Russia's economy is stagnant at best.
Hopefully it gets worse than that. Would sanctions really work? I mean, if we really embargoed the snot out of everything Russian, could we cause them to fold?
Well, I think you could potentially cause them to fold to a point, or you could cause them to hyper-react and have a bigger problem. That's the balancing act between the two. You've got a 70-plus-year-old former KGB agent who's, no matter what, is going to be seeing, you know, his time coming to an end, regardless of when that is and what that looks like. How does he want to necessarily go out? What does he want to gain? And you could theoretically cause them to get to a position to where he's like, you know what, I'm just going for it all and do something unique, I guess, to world history.
Hmm.
And we hope it doesn't go that way. But it absolutely could cause them to fold, too. And the question is, how much control does one person have over an entire nation if that entire nation is now seeing that he wants to start throwing around nuclear weapons in this case, or hypersonic missiles or things like that?
Well, the difference is in what we do. I mean, if we kick them in the gonads, it's one reaction. If we strangle them financially, it might be another. And just merely,
most certainly,
just merely offending his pride, you know, a la losing face, to use an Asian expression, might anger him. But if he sees how much money it's costing him, how it's bleeding him economically, maybe he won't be tempted to do something desperate. Maybe I misread the tea leaves. You've been there. I haven't.
Well, I don't think it's a misread. I think it's just a guess of which way it would go. And most people didn't really fully guess that he was going to go for an all-of-country, total Ukraine approach versus, you know, Luhansk and Donetsk in the Donbas region. So at this point, it's trying to guess a person's motives based on what they're doing on the ground and in the air over that country.
All right. Stand by.
And based on the fact that he could be a lot more ruthless, I don't think he wants to rile up the entire country and the world in the process here.
All right. Hold on.
You're listening to America Armed and Free on KVOI, your high-velocity conduit to freedom, with Charles Heller.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Good morning, Charles. Thank you. I have over 100 magazines and then about 20 gun digest books, older ones.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Bible Shooters.
Shooter's Bible.
Shooter's Bible.
Bible Shooters.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Disarmed population can be brought to its knees. No one can resist as tyrants do as they please. These Bill of Rights freedoms with which we are blessed. Without the second, what good are the rest?
Yeah, the people of Ukraine are figuring that out right now about the Second Amendment and why we have it. Back in our last segment with us is retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, and also caller Eb. Eb wanted to ask a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my view is the easiest way to strangle them, Russia, financially, is to open up the Keystone Pipeline, start drilling, and produce massive amounts of oil to export again. Drive oil down below $60 a barrel, Russia starts losing money. Drive it to 35, it really pains them.
Darren?
You know, I was on another interview the other day, and I was telling them that in order to do this right, the best thing we can possibly do as a country right now is to treat the Keystone Pipeline and energy independence like the space race of the 80s, well, 60s through the 80s, and go in all in and tie our NATO allies in Europe and other allies closer to us through energy rather than drive them away from us. So I think there is certainly some merit to that statement, and I think it would have a result. And it has to be it's not going to be the now solution. It can be a then solution, but it needs to be sooner than later.
So, in other words, drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, absolutely. And
sadly,
I think people saw, like,
under the Brandon administration, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Darren?
No, it won't. Every single little thing that talks about drill is automatically seen as anti-environmental. But you know, people saw the total footprint of what the drilling and the wildlife refuge in Anwar would look like in Alaska. It's so minuscule with modern technology as to no one would even notice.
hey, if they want to put a derrick in my backyard, it's cool by me. Pay me a few bucks a month what it's worth, and heck yeah. Or if I could just get some gasoline in return, I'd love it. You know, gas is up to $3.76 a gallon here. I don't know about over by you up in Montana. Probably more expensive because you're more remote to any pipeline or supply service. All right, to the phones again. And Diego, let's see. Wait a minute. Let's do this and maybe and this. Diego, you're on with retired Lieutenant Colonel Gobb. Go ahead.
Lieutenant Colonel, question. Did you ever see when Vladimir Putin was interviewed for over 2 hours with in 2015 with Charlie Rose?
Can you hold on 1 second? I need to do something with your line. I need to put you on hold and put you on line two. Okay, go ahead. Do it again.
Lieutenant Colonel, did you happen to see the two-hour interview that Putin gave Charlie Rose in 2015?
No, I have not. I think I was in another country, kind of busy at the time.
Okay.
Well, it's on YouTube.
Vladimir Putin said that Estonia, Latvia, the other countries around there, they were Russian blood. They have Russian blood. And before the League of Nations in 42 carved up Europe, that was all the Soviet Union. So when he was raised in the Soviet Union, trained KGB Soviet Union, his thought process was, these are all Russian people, Russian territory. And when it comes to the money aspect, he could just take over the oligarchs, all their money, and just take it over. So I just don't believe the money factor plays any part into this, because he could always just control that aspect of the money.
Not without one of them trying to kill him and maybe succeed.
That's a whole other story.
What?
He's KGB.
Yeah, but it's an important part of the story. I mean, it's not. He is not into causing head-bashing sessions if he can avoid it. He wants to get people to do things his way by persuasion, by coercion, not by murder. And they would rather the same, but if they take everything that if he takes everything they got, they'll kill him.
Well, again, his thought process is those other countries, Estonia, Latvia,
are Russians. Right,
let's
let's let Darren respond. Darren?
Well, I don't disagree with that they're interested in the Baltic states. In fact, back in August, when my co-founder and I, Blaine, both at the same time, said that Ukraine is next, whatever that looks like, we batted around some ideas regarding Iran, Syria, Israel, China, Taiwan, and just kind of, we had some disagreements about the order of things, but it seems like all those were on the table. The other critical piece of this, in keeping with Putin's strategy about how he likes to chip away at the edges for the most part, until now, I guess, there's a thing called the Suwalki Gap, and that's that little stretch of land that runs between Kaliningrad and Russia proper along northern Poland and Lithuania. And that has always been an area that's been looked at pretty heavily, because it would be pretty easy to cut that off, move north, and gain the Baltic states, and that would probably take a few, 3 to 4 days. Maximum. When I had an aviation task force sitting on an airfield in Latvia, one of our concerns was, if Russia moves very, very quickly, the airfield's gone. You have no time to do anything. And we actually looked at ways of how you could fly a helicopter with external tanks over water to get out of the country. And that, that's not a popular thing to have. You didn't advertise that kind of stuff, because they're like, oh, you're just going to run. I'm like, well, if you're not thinking about how you can position yourself somewhere else in order to fight again later, rather than just be destroyed in place, I think as a leadership, in leadership, you're failing your people if you don't have them at least go through that process. As far as the money is concerned, money is always a factor, but when it comes to Putin, besides his bank account, it's always going to be Mother Russia and the pride of your homeland.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise known as Colonel Custer saying, what do you mean we're surrounded?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and he was a colonel at the time, not a general. So
right, yeah. He kept going back and forth. And I'm of course in the state where he decided to finalize that.
Right. his famous last words, look at all them dag blame Indians. All right. Diego, do you have a follow up?
No, I just believe that everybody thinks that The Ukrainians are fighting back, and you know they're taking these tankers out. This is far from over.
Yeah, and what if it Diego, take your answer on the air. And what if it becomes an insurgency, Colonel Gob? Gob, I'm sorry, I keep mispronouncing your name, Colonel Gob. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, it's not.
That's actually correct.
I have a. I'm sorry. What?
That's actually correct, Gob. Yeah.
Okay, I'm. I have responsibility to get it right. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No worries. No, it's. Well, we are proof positive that insurgencies aren't easy, and they take years. And regardless of people's arguments whether or not we should have been in Afghanistan as long as we were or gone into Iraq at all, the lessons about insurgencies is it doesn't matter how much tech you have. It matters how much will you have. And 44 million people in Ukraine, they have a lot of national pride and willpower. You can guarantee they're willing to make this last years if they had to, and I don't think Putin wants to get involved in that. That's why he went after Kyiv so quickly. If he can decapitate that government, get them removed, put something in place, and let the majority of the Ukraine people continue to live a life that looks generally like what it already looked like, I think he could avoid that, and he'd be all right with that.
But with the people?
I don't think they would, regardless. And either way, you're going to end up with that. And I think he's going to do all he can to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
I think the way that Zelensky is passing out weapons, that it's going to be impossible for him to maintain a shadow government, because what's going to happen is that people are going to have the means and the will to rise up, and they will do exactly that, even if he is successful in the short run. So we'll see what happens. But I know one thing we'll see, and that we'll see the theme music coming up now. So I have to let you go. Do you want to give your foundation's web address again?
Yeah, we are restore-liberty.org, and we're on every social media channel you can imagine. Just look for the elm tree, and that's us.
All right. Appreciate you being with us. Thank you for the hour of your life.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. And I want to encourage everybody to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
By thy might, great God, our King.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.